Good evening or afternoon. Yeah, it's afternoon, right? It's sunny out. It's not even dark. This is Katie Bosler here, your Monday host for a Juno afternoon. And I want to let you know that in the next hour, we'll find out about tonight's presentation on the sinking of the Princess Sophia with guest Murray Lou Spartz. Conan Vandal will educate us on the HUB after-school program. That might mean hub. We'll hear from the Juno Roller Girls about next Saturday's bout. And U.S. Senator Mark Begich will let us know about a special honor for Juno's Filipino community. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more today on a Juno afternoon on KTOO FM 104.3. And just a quick look at the weather. It is sunny, but high winds still downtown, up to 30 miles per hour, gusts to 40 miles per hour. And now the AFN report.
Reporting from the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage, Alaska, I'm Sarah Gonzalez. Day two of the AFN Convention Friday heard morning speeches and again focused heavily on subsistence management issues. In a long address from U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, she spoke of the need for a unifying force to include Alaska Natives, Juneau, the capital, and Washington, D.C., to most effectively resolve the issues affecting the Native community. She remarked that health care for veterans had been extended to rural areas via tribal health facilities and encouraged Alaska Native veterans to register with Veterans Affairs to use those services. The senator urged management partnerships between government and Alaska Native people in other areas as well.
We need you to have a seat at this table when it comes to sound resource management, science, and traditional knowledge go hand in hand, so we need you working there with us.
A stronger Alaska Native voice was the common thread among the action plans presented to the Federation by Thursday's work session moderators on the topics of education, tribal-state relations, and subsistence. About 500 participants voted with wireless handheld technology. They were overwhelmingly in favor of more culturally relevant curricula in rural schools, the creation of an Alaska Native Affairs cabinet-level department within the state government, and having much more say in the management of subsistence. Myron Nanag, UPIC, head of the Association of Village Council Presidents, asked the governor earlier this year to declare a disaster over low salmon runs in the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. He said that criminalization of Alaska Natives for using subsistence had to stop, yet he believes that if arrests of users had not been made in August, that there would not have been such a large focus on management at this AFN. He added that while the action plan established the AFN was a solid start, there was still much to discuss regarding limitations on personal use versus commercial fishing practices.
You know, one of the questions that we have, if a person gets two king salmon for food on the table and they're catching thousands of Chinook salmon out in the Bering Sea or elsewhere or even in the Gulf of Alaska and they're throwing them overboard, who's more in the wrong? Because, you know, we just can't understand why people can legally throw over Chinook salmon when they can be bound for the spawning grounds to perpetuate the survival of that species for many years to come.
Nanag said a key to better subsistence management was providing training for Alaska Natives in the sciences.
Because we need our own biologists, and most biologists that come to work for the state of Alaska come to the state and spend only 5 years and leave.
Brought to the Federation were 43 resolutions ranging from subsistence management, energy costs, and suicide prevention to funding for better housing and a resolution mandating that the state of Alaska recognize Alaska Native corporation-owned land as private land. Joy Huntington, Koyakon Athabascan of Fairbanks, was a featured speaker Saturday. She reflected that the immense issues facing Alaska Natives will be of concern for years to come.
I have two small children. I have a two-year-old and a four-year-old, and a lot of my friends have small children as well. So we're thinking 50, 100 years down the road, and that's a little bit unique because, you know, we're just sort of almost starting our careers. So we know that the decisions that are made today are going to impact our children. I want my daughters to be able to fish, you know, in their future and to bring their children out fishing.
Artists young and old featured their work at an arts and crafts fair that ran throughout the 3 days of the conference. Marlene Nielsen, UPIC of Coconuck, creates fish skin art. She said one of the reasons she likes to come to AFN is to teach others about her craft.
I want people to learn to do it And any ideas on how I do it, I want to pass it on so everybody could do it.
Jeremiah James, Clinkett of Yakutat, brings his seal and sea otter pelts to AFN to sell to Alaska Native artists. For him, this marketplace presents an economic opportunity as well as a chance to connect with old friends.
Living in rural Alaska, there isn't too many job opportunities that are a constant source of income. Selling seals and sea otters is a sustainable resource that comes around every year.
This year's AFN convention wrapped up Saturday. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Sarah Gonzalez.
AFN News Broadcasts produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding provided by Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, the Siri Foundation, ConocoPhillips, Cook and the Tribal Council, the Pebble Partnership, and Donlin Gold. This is Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
On KTOO FM 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska, this is your Monday host for a Juneau afternoon, Katie Bosler. And with me in the studio is Mary Lou Spartz. She is here to tell us about a presentation tomorrow night on the anniversary of the sinking of the Princess Sophia. This is a special project leading up to the 100th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
Okay. The Princess Sophia left Skagway late on the 23rd of October, 1918. She was fully loaded with passengers. In fact, people were turned away because they didn't have room for them. Mm. She had a lot of freight. She had five dogs, horses aboard from the manifest. And so she was headed to Point South. And the reason everyone was so eager to get aboard her was because this was the last ship out of the Yukon and out of Alaska that would guarantee people the opportunity to get home to their respective homes in time for the holidays. So that was one of the reasons. And the other reason was that American young men were headed south to join up because we were in the tail end of the First World War. And the young men were going down to go to France and to fight the big battles, which they never got to do, of course.
Right, yeah. Remind us of this tragic outcome.
The Sophia was headed south, and there was a horrific snowstorm, just a horrific storm. And you and I both know about the storms on Lynn Canal. The winds whip in something ferocious. And their hurricane force, and the snow was blinding everything. It was coming down in all directions, and there was just no let up to the storm. So the Sophia was off course. I estimate maybe a mile and a half. So she wasn't sticking to her course because of the storm, and she hit Vanderbilt Reef, which is about 50 miles north of here off Sentinel Island, and she. She hit that and just grounded there. So that's where she got stuck, and that was on the 24th in the early morning hours.
Yes.
And she was just captive of the reef. Now that Vanderbilt Reef isn't a reef like you and I may think of one. It's more like a great big rock, and so there's no easy connection to the land, which was the island. But on the other hand, the captain decided that the ship was not in any immediate danger, and that what he would do is notify the home office, the Canadian Pacific Railroad, in his home office in Vancouver, and explain to them what had happened, and they would advise him, which they did. They said, "We will be sending Princess May to take the passengers off, so just hang tough." So that was what they did. And, of course, the storm continued. It was the storm that just wouldn't abate, although it at times did. At times it was able to be calm enough so that the various small vessels that came to the aid of the Princess Sophia would have been able to take some of the passengers off. But it was risky, but it was at least an opportunity for them to be rescued.
And were some people rescued?
No one survived.
So they decided not to go on the small vessel because they thought the bigger vessel was coming?
We don't know what they decided.
Yeah.
The captain decided not to take the kind offer from the various small boats that gathered. Among them was the King and Wing, which was one of the small boats. They were fishing boats. These were men from Juneau, Douglas, who wanted to help and who were eager to get to do what they could.
Now, the King and Wing, what is the significance of that one?
Sorry?
Was it the King and Wing? Is that what you called the vessel? One of them was. What was the significance of that one?
Oh, it was just a small vessel that came out.
Uh-huh. Gosh. So
we don't know, of course, what went on, except that apparently the passengers chose to believe that the captain apparently instilled great confidence that the May would be coming along and that they would be treated with all due safety and courtesy, and then that they would continue their voyage. Mm-hmm. At first he thought, or we understand that he thought that on the next tide that she would float free. And perhaps she might have, but the way she was angled into the reef, she was just trapped.
And how many people perished?
There were over 300, including the crew.
It's such a great tragedy of this area, isn't it?
It still holds the record for being the most tragic shipwreck in the North Pacific, in this part of the North Pacific.
So you're giving a presentation tomorrow night around the anniversary of this. What's planned?
Well, I'm not really giving a presentation. What I'd like to do is invite people to join me, just to take a moment to reflect on the incident, and just to think about the Sophia. And we can't help but speculate as to why so many people had to die. It's just never going to quite leave our minds, I think. But the major reason I'm interested in doing it, not just because of the anniversary, but because in 2018 there will be the commemorative year for the sinking, and Juneau plays a very prominent role in the history, the story of the sinking, not in the sinking itself, but in the retrieval of the remains, which just were scattered all up and down Lynn Canal. Here again, people from Juneau got in their boats, went out and combed the beaches and coves to bring back the remains of those who had died.
That must have been awful.
Yes, it was. It couldn't have, it certainly, under those circumstances. This is October. This is no time of year to travel Lynn Canal or any of our waters here around Juneau, because it's wet, windy, cold, rainy, snowy. We get everything in October, you know that.
Oh, yes. So in October, you want to gather a group together that would be interested in figuring out a way to honor this commemorative year in 2018?
Yes. I know you you say 2018, gee, that's a long way off. And indeed it is, but there are... if we want to do some pretty significant things, we're going to have to get started on this. And I've been talking to Steve Hendrickson at the State Museum. And as we know, the museum will be closed for about 2 years while the new construction goes on. And so there needs to be some planning as to how to handle the artifacts that are at the museum that relate to this fire, and also how to put together other pieces for the community. There's quite a bit that can be done, that should be done, and Canada is doing a wonderful job. They're very busy. I've been in contact with several people, one in Whitehorse, one in Victoria, and they're putting together a traveling exhibit, which they hope to have ready by 2016 to travel around Canada.
Okay, the Canadians are on it.
Yeah, they're on top of it.
Okay, so we need to step up and prepare here. Where is the gathering and what time tomorrow?
It'll be at the downtown Juneau Library on top of the parking garage, and it will be from 6 to 7, And I certainly invite everybody, those who know and have heard this familiar story for a long time, and those who may just be curious and new to the community and be interested in finding out more, and have some ideas as to what might be appropriate and how they would see this coming together for us.
Well, it sounds like a really very important and significant effort, Mary Lou. Anything you'd like to add?
Well, I'd like to thank you for having me here today and giving me a chance to talk about this. And I look forward to seeing people at the library tomorrow, and you're invited.
All right. Well, that's good to know. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate.
I will love you forever, my darling. My lover, Mrs. Harper, my one. And the north wind is starting to blow in. Hold tightly, my darling, hold.
my lover, Mr. Harper, my life. And the north wind is starting to blow in. Hold tightly, my darling, hold
That is the Alaska String Band with the Princess Sophia. This is Katie Bosler, and you are listening to A Juno Afternoon on KTOO FM. And with me in the studio now is Conan Vandal. He is the executive director of the Hub After School program, and he's here to tell us about it and a fundraising dinner that's coming up.
Yeah, we're just trying to let people know about the Hub After School program. We've been going around doing some fundraising for the Hub. We're doing a fundraising dinner on November 10th at 6:30 at the Hub. And as we've been going around and sharing with people about it, nobody knows what the Hub is.
You took the words right out of my mouth. What is the Hub?
We're a local after-school program. We are trying to offer a safe place for right now middle schoolers and in the near future, high schoolers to come after school. Between that time where they're getting out of school and their parents are coming home from work, and to provide just a positive place for those kids to come and hang out and get to do things that they enjoy.
So this is like 2 to 6, 3 to 6?
Well, it's 3 to 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Right now, when we're serving, our opening week is actually going to be October 29th. We're going to open on Monday. We're working on getting school buses to transport kids to the facility. We're going to open at 3 o'clock on Monday. We'll close at 6. In the future, we'll be open Wednesdays. And then just this 1 week, we'll be open Monday and Friday, 3 to 6. Following weeks after that will be Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Okay, so you're having sort of a grand opening then.
Kind of a grand opening. We've been open for the last 2 years,
but
still not very many people know who we are. There's a lot of sixth graders who know who we are.
Okay.
And their parents know who we are. We've been getting a lot of questions recently asking if we were going to reopen. And so we're really excited that we are going to reopen. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
So walk me through the Hub. If I'm a sixth or seventh grader and I walk in there for the first time, what do I see?
Well, right when you walk in, we have a wonderful facility. It's actually it's pretty big. You walk in, we have two circular gaming centers, each with seven TVs hooked up to them, hanging from the ceiling. One has Xbox 360s. The other one has PlayStations. We're upgrading all of our stuff right now. So we should have a lot of PS3s. We have.
I don't even know what a PS3 is.
A PlayStation 3.
That's just how on this I am. Okay, go ahead.
We're getting big with the gaming. We've got three flat screens where we show movies. We have two large projection screens where right now a lot of the kids play video games. And we'll be able to show movies and things like that later. We have a performance stage, which I'm really excited about to use this year. And
what ideas do you have for the performance stage?
Well, like I said, I would like to serve our high school community a lot more than we're doing. Right now we're doing...
So you want to add high schoolers to the middle school population there?
Yeah, goal for this year is... Mm-hmm. We've offered it as just kind of open. Everybody could come. But high schoolers don't want to come where the middle schoolers are. There's kind of a separation. There's that cool factor.
Right.
And so when we say everybody come... If we have a lot of middle schoolers, the high schoolers don't want to. So we want to provide a place for both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And the stage, what I'm really excited about is to offer an alternative to, like, the raves that we have. I actually used to work for Cornerstone, Juno Youth Services.
Mm-hmm.
It's an emergency shelter for kids that are getting caught drinking or getting out of JYC.
Mm-hmm.
And we would get kids all the time that were sneaking out to go get drunk and go to a rave or go out the road or go somewhere else, and there's... I would take kids from Cornerstone and try to find, they weren't able to go to school, they'd be expelled or suspended or something, and we'd be trying to find healthy activities for these kids. And we had a certain amount of money to spend on these activities. And I'd be driving all around Juneau, and there's nowhere for us to go.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the weeknights, or not the weeknights, the weekends, Friday night and Saturday night. These kids are, the high schoolers specifically, are wondering, what are we going to do Friday night? What are we going to do Saturday night? And so the goal is to provide a place where we can start to grow kind of a Juneau music scene, support local artists, and then bring them on stage and have a place where they can perform for their friends and kind of hone their craft. Mm-hmm. And then have a cool place.
The students could form their own bands and play on stage. Use that facility.
Absolutely.
Instead of the parents' garage.
Yep, that is the goal. So we're just really excited. I know that in Seattle I've seen the positives of what having a place to go on Friday night and Saturday night can be.
Right.
You have the choice of going to a party, of going someplace where you shouldn't go, or you can go and see some live music and go hang out with your friends in a supervised environment where there's not going to be all those drugs and alcohol.
Sure.
So it's just a much healthier environment. So that's what we're hoping to promote, and that's the thing I'm really excited about with our stage.
Okay. And then as far as the facilities for the middle schoolers with the video games and the movies, I mean, it sounds like a lot of group sitting around, but I guess that's what they like to do, huh?
we try to promote a little bit more than that. The first hour when the kids walk in the door is actually media-free. We do have iPod stations hooked up. They're stuck into the tables where the kids can listen to music, but we want them to be working on their homework. We want to support them in their academics, and we have a gym that we're able to use so we can play games, dodgeball, physical activities.
Okay.
So it's not just all sitting down. We have ping pong table. We have a ping pong table. We have foosball. I'm huge on ping pong. So my goal is to get those kids really, really good at that. Mm-hmm. I know after a little bit of practice, the kids pick it up and are wonderful. Much better than me.
Okay. Get some tournaments going there.
Yeah. So it's not a place where we're just saying, sit down and veg out.
Mm-hmm.
We want it to be a positive place. We actually have five classrooms, really well good sized classrooms where we actually plan to offer mini courses, where kids can come in, learn different things, different crafts, different skills that they can come in. We want to bring in people from the community who can train these kids. One of my goals for this year is to offer, and again this is related. Music is really big to me, and I know music is really big for our youth. And all these kids say, I want to be in a band. I want to be a singer. I want to do something. One idea that we have is to offer a service where we have a guitarist, a drummer, a bass player, the instrumentalists come in and bring in kids and say, you guys want to be in a band? We'll come in here, and we'll train you up in the instrument that you want to use. We'll support you in it, and then we have a venue where you can come and perform once you have honed your craft a little bit. And we actually have right now a local recording studio that's offered us free recording time for winners of Battle of the Bands and things like that.
Well, it sounds like so many great opportunities for young people through this Hub After School Program, which is located?
It is on the backside of Juneau Christian Center, right next to Fred Meyer.
Okay, and if people want more information, is there a website or phone number?
There is a website. The website is thehubasp.org. And we have a phone number. It's a little outdated, but you can certainly leave me a voicemail. We're not so big yet that I won't get your voicemail. The phone number is 907-789-0504, and you can also reach me at director@thehubasp.org.
Okay, so again, the phone number is 789-0504. And the website is?
thehubasp.org.
Okay, and you do that. Where does your sponsorship, your funding, come from?
We receive state funding. We receive a lot of our funding comes from community partners, from local businesses. Actually, the whole part of our doing this fundraiser is to hope to introduce new small business owners to our facility and show them what we're doing in the community, show them what they can be a part of.
Okay, and that's going to take place?
That is November 10th at 6:30.
At the Hub,
yes.
Okay.
And tickets are on sale right now at Hearthside Books and also at Rejuvenation Spa.
Okay, and is there going to be a dinner or auction?
There is going to be dinner. It's we're going to have dinner, we're going to have a silent auction, and we're going to have a dessert auction as well. We're going to have an opportunity to just get together and for everyone to see the facility. I guess I should mention the tickets that are on sale at Hearthside and Rejuvenation, those are $20 for a person, and they're $50 for a family.
Okay. Well, sounds lots of information there. Anything you want to add, Conan Vandal?
Anything that I want to add?
Yeah.
We're just really excited to offer. My goal. I'm 24 years old. I don't think that I'm the average executive director for a program like this. We have a wonderful board, and I think we have we have the ability this year to have kind of the drive of youth and then the wisdom that comes with age, and to build a program that's functional and also is what the kids want to participate in. I think all the kids say, I don't know, what do you want to do? Well, I don't know what you want to do. I'm sure everybody's heard a kid say that.
Well, yeah, and I hope these kids, I guess it was a little bit early, but I was just running in there at Fred Meyer before this, and there were a few couple, looks like middle school or high school kids, sitting on the couches at Fred Meyer, and I thought, well, if they knew about the hub, it was your hours, they'd have a lot more fun over there, it sounds like.
And that's the goal, is that they can hop online eventually and just see what we're doing and come participate with us.
Yeah, there's not a lot of mall action here, guys. Skip Fred Meyer, go over to the hub.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks so much, Conan, for coming in.
Thank you for having me on.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. This is your Monday host, Katie Bosler, and with me in the studio is Verta Breaker, Jess Julie, and Bitter Glitter. Yes, we have a trio of roller girls before me in the studio, and they're going to tell us about their next interleague bout happening this weekend. Yes.
Well, yeah, thanks so much for having us on today.
Sure, Jess Julie.
Jess Julie, yeah. We'll be bouting this Saturday against Fairbanks' team, Roller Borealis.
Oh, I like that.
Got a great name. They're bringing down 4 All-Stars, so it'll be a pretty good competitive match. We're expecting a lot of big hits, a lot of very crowd-pleasing play, and we're going to bring our all, so it'll be a good bout.
Yeah, now, is this your, like, third interleague bout, or how many have you had now?
This is the second for the season.
Okay. Yeah.
The last team we played 3 other teams, so this will be our 5th travel team game.
Right.
Our second time playing
here in town.
Players from Fairbanks. Technically the third, because we had 2 of the gals down last month, Sabotage and Bad Lady.
Okay. So they are Aurora Borealis. Are we the Simply the Juno Roller Girls, or
Juno Roller Girls?
Juno Roller
yep.
Girls. Okay, Yeah, and we save the more elaborate names for your individual teams when you do play each other here.
Correct.
Right.
Yep. We've got two home teams. Kill Cats and Bitter are both Kill Cats, and I'm a Raven Lunatic.
So. Yeah. Gosh. So it'll be where and when?
This Saturday, 7 p.m. Centennial Hall. Doors at 6:15.
There's going to be a costume party at halftime, so you're going to sign up at the door, and we've got lots of great prizes to give away.
Oh, yeah. People are gearing up for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then afterwards we'll have our after party at the Rockwell. And if you bring your little ticket stub or proof of purchase that you went to the game, you get to go in for free. Otherwise, it's a $5 charge. So if you're looking for a good place to go that evening, you know, head over to the Rockwell.
So working in Rockwell, which is still relatively new in town, this is folks in the base, if you will, of the old Elks Club downtown, and it's a really great restaurant mm-hmm. and bar. Will there be music or anything happening there?
Yeah, DJ White Chocolate's actually going to do our music for us, so it'll be full of dancing.
It's really good, yeah.
And is that will you be donning your costumes for the bout or for the after party?
I think skaters will probably be dressed as skaters. But
maybe zombified skaters.
Yeah. We expect a little bit different uniform on for our Halloween bouts. We tend to have a little bit of fun with it, a little bit more face paint, a little bit mm-hmm. more
glitter.
Zany fun. Yeah.
really bitter glitter. So you're encouraging the audience to, or the spectators to come in costume.
Absolutely.
Okay, gosh. Now, and how about tickets? I know that especially around holiday times, these can go pretty fast. What do you recommend for people to do if they really want to go and get a ticket?
Go online right now to JunoRollerGirls.com and click Buy Tickets or hop on by the Jack Hearthside Books or Rainy Retreat Books, and you can get old-fashioned paper tickets there, too.
Okay.
They're $20 in advance, $22 at the door.
Okay.
And they do sell out.
They do sell out. We will be holding a very small number at the door. We know that Juneau is not a think-in-advance kind of town, and we've definitely disappointed fans time and time again by selling out too fast. So if you don't make it, fight for the front of the line, show up early, and try to get in.
Okay. And, you know, are you all – the Roller Girls now have been going for, what, 3 years? Is that right? 4 years?
Yeah, we've been together since May 2010. This is only our second bouting season.
Mm-hmm.
We took a long time training because we really wanted to bring our best skate forward, coming out and asking people to check out roller derby. And mm-hmm. I think we do that. I think we do that pretty well.
And have you all been roller girls from the get-go?
I have.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a newer skater. I mm-hmm. started last December, so I've been in one bout.
And we're starting to run out of time, but just real quick from each of you, what is it about being a roller girl that keeps you being a roller girl?
I would definitely have to say the sense of empowerment and building of the self-esteem. That's mine, Berta Breaker's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree with her. I can add like the great sense of community. You can come in, like, regardless of your background, regardless of, like, you know, whether you work out all the time or whether you're more of a couch potato like me, you can come in, you can feel the love, you can throw some big hits, you can have a great time, and you feel amazing. It's like kind of like that whole alter ego. Leave whatever you've got going behind, leave the kids at home, you know, whatever, and just come raise a little heck.
All right. How about you, Bitter Glitter?
Definitely community. It's an awesome community. When I first started, I was scared to death of these ladies, and now they're some people I really consider close to myself, but also I've never been an athletic person, and there's you find this athleticism in you may never have known, and then you get to wear awesome outfits and makeup, and you get to have a fun name, and you get to hit people and not go to jail. So, awesome.
Sounds like a dream sport for a lot of us. And well, thank you so much.
So you're coming out, Katie? You're going to be next season?
Okay. I'll have to think about it for a while.
But not knowing how to skate is what's keeping you off the track. We do run an intro skating class. It's going right now. We're still letting people sign up. It goes till December 14th, I think.
16th.
Same, thank you.
Okay.
Sundays, 1 to 3, sign up through the community school's website.
Okay, so people would need to sign up through the website if they want to do that before they come
on
down.
Yeah, Juneau Community Schools. If you show up there, mm-hmm. I'll give you a form and we can sign you up on spot. But, yeah.
Okay. And once again, the bout against the Fairbanks.
Roller Borealis
is Saturday at 7 o'clock
mm-hmm.
at
Centennial Hall.
All right. Well, Vertebreaker, Just Julie, and Bitter Glitter, thank you so much for coming in, and good luck to you this weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note.
What do you think? What species is it? No, let me ask you this. What are you seeing? Don't worry about the species. Tell me what you see.
Identifying birds is fun, instructive, and useful. But as Dick Ashford, a hawk expert and president of Klamath Bird Observatory, knows, there's more to learning about birds. A good teacher can welcome you into the field of wonder.
We could look at a bird and say, okay, there is a red-tailed hawk. Please note the patagio marks on the leading edge of the wings. Those are diagnostic. Leave it there. But where does it go in the winter? Where does it nest? What kind of food does it eat? And so I try to provide people with a sense of not just being able to go back home and say they can identify a particular hawk. I hope to go back home and say, wow. Did that feel good?
Dick is an expert on eagles, owls, and hawks. But he would be the first to quote his mentor, Point Reyes naturalist Rich Stalkup, who says,
there are no experts, no masters, only students. It is as it should be.
I hope you're lucky enough to explore the field of wonder and say, as Dick does about his teacher,
he taught me not how to look at birds and identify them by field marks, but how to look at them as part of the natural world.
For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. You know, fall can be an invigorating time to be out looking for hawks, eagles, and owls. You can find links to birding groups on our website, birdnote.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac from Monday, the 22nd of October, 2012. It's the birthday of John Gould, born in Brighton, Massachusetts, 1908. He and his wife settled in Lisbon Falls, Maine, on the farm where his great-grandfather had homesteaded. John Gould edited the newspaper there, where he got to meet a student from high school who was supposed to edit the school paper, but he got bored by it and wrote a satirical version, so Gould took the young man in hand and taught him how to shape up his writing. Student was Stephen King. 1942, John Gould wrote his first weekly column for the Christian Science Monitor. He continued that for more than 60 years. He wrote about baseball and night rides on sleighs, about fishing, about his mother's homeland of Prince Edward Island. One of his earliest books, Farmer Takes a Wife, was a big bestseller in 1945. It's the birthday of the novelist Doris Lessing, born in what is now Iran in 1919. Her father lost a leg in the British Army. He was a clerk in a bank. When she was small, the family moved to Rhodesia. Her father became a farmer there, and they lived in a mud hut that was thatched, but it was full of books that her mother had ordered by post from England. She went to an all-girls convent school, married at the age of 19, had two children, divorced, married again, had another child, divorced, moved to London at the age of 30. And a year later, she published her first novel, The Grass is Singing, set in Rhodesia. Her best-known book, The Golden Notebook, came out in 1962. A few years ago, a critic wrote, Nobel or not, some people still think of Doris Lessing as either a one-book wonder, famous for The Golden Notebook, or a literary version of a crazy bag lady writing books about her cats and novels set on other planets. Doris Lessing, who said, a writer falls in love with an idea and gets carried away, if you can imagine the sheer pleasure of having an idea and taking it, it's one of the great pleasures in my life. Here's a poem for today by Denise Levertov, Sojourns in the Parallel World. We live our lives of human passions, cruelties, dreams, concepts, crimes, and the exercise of virtue in and beside a world devoid of our preoccupations, free from apprehension, though affected certainly by our actions, a world parallel to our own, though overlapping. We call it nature, only reluctantly admitting ourselves to be nature, too. Whenever we lose track of our own obsessions, our self-concerns, because we drift for a minute, an hour even, of pure, almost pure response to that insouciant life, cloud, bird, fox, the flow of light, the dancing pilgrimage of water, vast stillness of spellbound ephemerae on a lit window pane, animal voices, mineral hum, wind conversing with rain, ocean with rock, stuttering of fire to coal. Then something tethered in us, hobbled like a donkey on its patch of gnawed grass and thistles, breaks free. No one discovers just where we've been when we're caught up again into our own sphere, where we must return, indeed, to evolve our destinies. But we have changed a little. Sojourns in the Parallel World, a poem by Denise Levertov, from Sands of the Well, published by New Directions Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Goddard College, offering low residency bachelor's and master's of fine arts degrees in creative writing. More at goddard.edu. Written by Betsy Allister, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Juneau Empire, celebrating a century in Juneau. More information on Facebook, in print, or JuneauEmpire.com on the anniversary festivities for the Juneau Empire.
To a Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News. This is your host for Mondays, Katie Bosler. And with me on the line should be Senator Mark Begich. Senator.
How are you? How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great, and it's great to hear you loud and clear from Anchorage.
Yes, I'm in Anchorage. I'll be flying out tonight back to Washington, D.C. for a little bit, but I've been in Anchorage for the Alaska Federation Natives Conference, and then before that I was in Israel for about 4.5 days as a member of the Armed Services Committee, and as you can imagine, a lot of issues there, but very busy period of time.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What, any highlights from AFN for you?
Well, I think the most important thing is obviously, you know, getting a chance to sit down with the Alaska Native leaders, not only the leaders that are currently in office, but we met with a group of young, new leaders that are kind of up-and-comers within the Alaska Federation Natives. Very interesting to see their perspective on what they see as the future. And then, you know, subsistence, obviously, a big issue, the issue of rural energy. We talked about, matter of fact, I used Juneau as an example to see Alaska building using biomass, which is a great opportunity to start, you know, getting more renewable energy. And I used some examples of Tok and Fort Yukon, again, biomass being used out there. So talked a lot about what we can do about energy. And another one, which was veterans, big issue, a lot of veterans within the Alaska Native community, but big challenges for them is in order to get the veteran care they need, they have to come to Anchorage or Seattle. And in Juneau, as you know, you have a small clinic, but not a full service. And so we talked about a new agreement we have now where we can, as a veteran, if you live in rural Alaska, you can go to any of the federally funded clinics, may they be any health service operated or just operated through another type of operation, as long as they're federally funded. You can get your health care there, and that clinic will be reimbursed. It's historic, first time ever done in the
nation. Okay. Oh, very interesting.
So a lot of stuff.
Sounds like it. And you are on the line with us to help us make an announcement about something that's very special happening with the Juneau Filipino community.
Yes, we're very excited that Jennifer Strickler, as president of the Juneau Filipino community, which I've met with many times down there, is now the Honorary Council of Republic of the Philippines, a huge honor. And for Juneau, they should be celebrating a great deal, because I know the Filipino community is very excited about her post that now she'll be involved in. That position is pretty important. We have a huge number of Filipinos throughout the state, and her job is literally like an elected official. When people have concerns or issues, or maybe they're trying to get a relative from the Philippines over to the U.S., to Alaska, this is their contact. So she represents the Filipino community, and she's from Juneau, and it's very exciting.
Okay, so now is she working for your office?
No, she actually is appointed by the Philippine government, and each government, not all governments, but some will select an honorary consul. When I was mayor, I used to host these events where we'd bring the honorary consuls together as a diplomatic corps for the state. So she will work with our office in regards to issues that members within the Filipino community may have that they've contacted her about. Lots of times around immigration, it's around jobs, fairness, it's around discrimination issues. But our job is to work with that honorary consul, and also they're the official voice at Filipino events. So, I mean, it's a pretty significant appointment by the Philippine government. You don't just get it overnight. You have to go through a process. They review you, and then once you're selected, you become that representative.
So is this something that the Juneau Filipino community has been working towards for a while?
Yes. I think they really saw this as an opportunity, one, to recognize someone from the community of Juneau, but really who could represent the Filipino community of the whole state. So it's something, again, you don't do overnight. It's a long process, and to know that she's been selected. And what's also, this month is Filipino Heritage Month. So having it done this month, acknowledging it and recognizing it, really comes at the right time.
So she's based in Juneau?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
But she'll represent all Filipinos throughout Alaska. So, for example, in Anchorage, we have several thousand. And so if they have issues that they feel they want to have a contact with the Philippine government in some form, then she would be that liaison, that person that would really help work through it. It's volunteer, so it's not like she has a big fancy office. Some, like the government of Japan, has a consul general's office here, not honorary, but a full-time, and that has staff. But honoraries, they work on their time, and it's a lot of work, but it's an incredible honor to be selected.
Yes. Now, I guess if people wanted to contact Jennifer Strickler, correct?
Yes.
Yes, who is the consul. Her title is exactly...
Yeah, the Honorary Consul for the Republic of the Philippines.
For the Republic of the Philippines. So if people want to contact her, do you have that on hand? Or?
You know, I don't, but you know what? We'll get you that so you can announce it in one of your shows, her contact number. We'll get that to you. Because it really, you know, again, what would happen in the past if you were new to the community, lots of times, like if you were in a large city like Seattle, Los Angeles, they have these as permanent offices. So that's one of the first places you would go, or the person you would talk to if you're from that country, to just get familiar with what's, you know, what the obligations are and things you need to be doing.
Sure.
But Alaska doesn't have these full-time offices, so these honorary consul generals really are critical for individuals to have knowledge of, so they can connect when they come to the country, come to the state, but also just be available. So we're you know, I was just at a Filipino banquet, matter of fact, the same night as AFM banquet on Saturday. I went from one to the next, and it's just a great community. And as you know, in Juneau, with the Phil Hall, Phil Am Hall, and the other work that goes on, they're pretty active.
Yes, definitely. Well, Senator Begich, thank you so much for announcing this this great news for the Filipino community.
A contact, a person to
welcome you and help you, I imagine, on your pathway to citizenship or just adjusting to your new life in the United States, it sounds like, if you're here in Alaska.
Exactly. That's the role. And we're, again, we work with the Diplomatic Corps of Alaska. There's a lot of honoraries in different areas and different countries they represent, but they're our link to the community when there are significant issues, and they become a great liaison to the Filipino government.
Well, thanks for announcing this, and I can't let you go without asking you, as a member of the Armed Services Committee, what would you like to hear in the debate tonight between the president and the presidential candidate for the Republican Party about international policy, since that is the focus?
Well, I think the one issue which needs real clarity, and that is how we, in these very tight budget times that we have, how we manage our budget, because we know there's going to be cuts, how they're going to be able to handle that at the same time, be able to ensure that we have strong national security, and how we're going to make that all kind of piece together. The second thing I'd hope they would talk about is kind of their view of our role, especially now just coming back from Israel.
Yes.
Our role in the Middle East, and how do we view who are our allies, and what I consider real allies, people who are going to be with us no matter what the conditions are, and how we will work with them and ensure they have the resources they need. So I think, you know, like I said, like just coming back from Israel, you can imagine Iran.
Yeah, what was your key takeaway from that trip?
Well, it was, first off, Iran is obviously the number one issue. And I agree with both Romney and Obama on the position that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon of any kind. That would be devastating to the region and to the world in a lot of ways. So I walked away from those 4.5 days recognizing that it's an unbelievable, resilient country being able to survive unbelievable conditions around them. We were headed as a delegation to the Gaza area, and we were told by security forces we could not go. They wouldn't even go because of the bombing that had occurred the night before. But we had a chance to meet a woman who lives there, not far from the Gaza Strip, who lives under this constant bombing. And it was an amazing story of why she wants to live there and why she thinks there's hope at the end of the tunnel of creating peace in the region. And I think that's one thing I did come away with, both from the Palestinians and the Israelis, that, and polls actually show this, 60% to 70% view that there is a solution for a two-state solution in the region, which means one for Palestine and one for Israel. And I think that was very encouraging, but I think there's some hardliners that are not allowing it to occur, as we know with Hamas. And so I think I walked away there with, you know, a tense feeling of we're on a verge of something's going to happen with regards to Iran. But on the flip side, there's incredible hope among the people of Israel that there is peace around the corner. But it's going to take more time and more negotiations to get there. But there is a much greater feeling than people acknowledge it than years ago. So I I'm hopeful. And I'll give you one more visual. I went through the bazaar in Jerusalem, and you had Palestinians, Arabs, Jews, non-Jews. I mean, just amazing. They're all together. And I was watching that and thinking, well, you know, the simple answer is if it can happen here, why can't it happen throughout the country?
Okay, there you go. And I imagine we'll be hearing much more about these issues in the debate between President Obama and candidate Mitt Romney in about an hour right here on KTOO. Senator Mark Begich, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Alaska Senator Mark Begich joining us right here on a Juneau afternoon via telephone from Anchorage. And his key announcement for this program was that Jennifer Strickler is the Honorary Counsel for the Republic of the Philippines. She has been appointed by the Philippine government. She will be based here in Juneau and is a liaison for newly new immigrants to
the capital city and to the state of Alaska. And I'm sure that I'm get more information about how to reach her through the Filipino community. Well, it's just about 4 o'clock here on KTOO FM. Up next is All Things Considered.
U.S. policy toward Iran, Afghanistan, Libya, and China. Those are among the foreign policy topics set for tonight's debate between President Obama and Mitt Romney. It's Monday, October 22nd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.